The Bitcoin concept came into existence on January 9, 2009, when Satoshi Nakamoto generated the first batch of coins. An unusual tale of group invention, digital gold charts the rise of the Bitcoin technology through the eyes of the movement's colorful central characters, including an Argentinian millionaire, a Chinese entrepreneur, Tyler and Cameron Winklevoss, and Bitcoin's elusive creator, Satoshi Nakamoto. Already, Bitcoin has led to untold riches for some, and prison terms for others. By 2014, 29-year-old Eric Voorhees had gone from being unemployed to becoming a millionaire, thanks to the Bitcoin gold rush. Voorhees had bought a gambling site back in 2012 for about $225, rebranded it as Satoshi Dice, and sold it a year later for some $11 million. The impulse that propelled Voorhees, and many others, into this gold rush had both everything and nothing to do with getting rich. They predicted astronomical growth in the value of Bitcoin. More importantly, they saw that the multi-layered Bitcoin computer code would remake many of the prevailing power structures of the world, including Wall Street banks and national governments. Bitcoin would do to money what the internet had done to the postal service and the media industry. Bitcoin's growth wouldn't just make him wealthy. It would also lead to a more just and peaceful world in which governments wouldn't be able to pay for wars and individuals would have control over their own money and their own destiny. From the beginning, Satoshi envisioned a digital analog to old-fashioned gold, a new kind of universal money that could be owned by everyone and spent anywhere. Like gold, these new digital coins were worth only what someone was willing to pay for them, initially nothing. But the system was set up so that, like gold, bitcoins would always be scarce, only 21 million of them would ever be released, and hard to counterfeit. As with gold, it required work to release new ones from their source, computational work in the case of bitcoins. Bitcoin also held certain obvious advantages over gold as a new place to store value. It didn't take a ship to move bitcoins from London to New York, it took just a private digital key and the click of a mouse. For security, Satoshi relied on uncrackable mathematical formulas rather than armed guards. But the comparison to gold went only so far in explaining why Bitcoin ended up attracting such attention. Each ingot of gold has always existed independent of every other ingot. Bitcoins, on the other hand, were designed to live within a cleverly constructed, decentralized network, just as all the websites in the world exist only within the decentralized network known as the Internet. Like the Internet, the Bitcoin network wasn't run by some central authority. Instead, it was built and sustained by all the people who hooked their computers into it, which anyone in the world could do. With the Internet, what connects everyone together is a set of software rules, known as the Internet Protocol, which governs how information moves around. Bitcoin has its own software protocol, the rules that dictate how the system works. Paper money has been a legal tender for many years, but it seems outdated given the level of technology available today. The emergence of Bitcoin is an attempt to provide a currency that meets the demands of the digital age. The physical entity of money replaced the trade by barter system. Cryptocurrency seems to be the logical replacement for the physical money in this age. The technical details of how the Bitcoin concept worked could be mind-numbingly complicated, involving advanced math and cryptography. But from its earliest days, a small group of dedicated followers saw that, at its base, Bitcoin was, very simply, a new way of creating, holding, and sending money. Bitcoins were not like dollars and euros, which are created by central banks and held and transferred by big, powerful financial institutions. This was a currency created and sustained by its users, with new money slowly distributed to the people who helped support the network. Given that it aimed to challenge some of the most powerful institutions in our society, the Bitcoin network was, from early on, described by its followers in utopian terms. Just as the internet took power from big media organizations and put it in the hands of bloggers and dissidents, Bitcoin held out the promise of taking power from banks and governments and giving it to the people using the money. The high-mindedness of this idea attracted plenty of derision. Most people thought it fell somewhere on the spectrum between Tamagotchi pet and Ponzi scheme, when they heard about it at all. But Bitcoin had the good fortune of entering the world at a utopian moment, in the wake of a financial crisis that had exposed many of the shortcomings of our existing financial and political system, creating a desire for alternatives. The Tea Party, Occupy Wall Street, and WikiLeaks, among others, had divergent goals, but they were united in their desire to take power back from the privileged elite and give it to individuals. Bitcoin provided an apparent technological solution to these desires. The degree to which Bitcoin spoke to its followers was apparent from the variety of people who left their old lives behind to chase the promise of this technology, aficionados like Eric Voorhees and many of his new friends. It didn't hurt that if Bitcoin worked, it would make the early users fabulously wealthy. As Eric liked to say, it's the first thing I know where you can both get rich and change the world. The survival of Bitcoin was due to the combined efforts of some disaffected revolutionaries and moneyed interests. Bitcoin attracted not just disaffected revolutionaries but also moneyed interests like Dan Moorhead, a hedge fund manager who had worked for Goldman Sachs after graduating from Princeton University. People like Moorhead pumped tens of millions of dollars into the Bitcoin ecosystem with the hope of big returns. In Silicon Valley, investors and entrepreneurs were clamoring to find ways to use Bitcoin to improve on existing payment systems like PayPal, Visa, and Western Union and to steal Wall Street's business. Even people who had little sympathy for Occupy Wall Street or the Tea Party could understand the benefits of a more universal money that doesn't have to be exchanged at every border, the advantages of a digital payment method that doesn't require you to hand over your identifying information each time you use it, the fairness of a currency that even the poorest people in the world can keep in a digital account without paying hefty fees, rather than relying only on cash, and the convenience of a payment system that makes it possible for online services to charge a penny or a dime, to view a single news article or skip an ad, skirting the current limits imposed by the 20 or 30 cent minimum charge for a credit card transaction. In the end, though, many of the people interested in more practical applications of Bitcoin still ended up talking about the technology in revolutionary terms, as an opportunity to make money by disrupting the existing status quo. Many bankers, economists, and government officials dismissed the Bitcoin fanatics as naive promoters of a speculative frenzy not unlike the Dutch tulip mania 4 centuries earlier. On several occasions, the Bitcoin story bore out the warnings of the critics, illustrating the dangers involved in moving toward a more digitized world with no central authority. And they appeared to be proven true when the largest Bitcoin company in the world, the exchange known as Mt. Gox, announced that it had lost the equivalent of about $400 million worth of its users' bitcoins and was going out of business, the latest of many such scandals to hit Bitcoin users. But none of the crises managed to destroy the enthusiasm of the Bitcoin believers, and the number of users kept growing through thick and thin. Within the first 5 years, more than 5 million Bitcoin wallets had been opened up on various websites, most of them outside the United States. Some were motivated by their skepticism toward the government, others by their hatred of the big banks, and yet others by more intimate, personal experiences. For example, a Chinese Walmart executive who had grown up with grandparents who escaped the communist revolution with only the wealth they had stored in gold, found Bitcoin to be a much more easily transportable alternative in an uncertain world. It was these people, in different places with different motivations, who had built Bitcoin and were continuing to do so, and who are the subject of this story. The creator of Bitcoin, Satoshi, disappeared back in 2011, leaving behind open-source software that the users of Bitcoin could update and improve. 5 years later, it was estimated that only 15% of the basic Bitcoin computer code was the same as what Satoshi had written. Beyond the work on the software, Bitcoin, like all money, was always only as useful and powerful as the number of people using it. Each new person who joined in made it that much more likely to survive. The Bitcoin story is not a normal startup story, about a lone genius molding the world in his image and making gobs of money. It is, instead, a tale of a group invention that tapped into many of the prevailing currents of our time: anger at the government and Wall Street, the battles between Silicon Valley and the financial industry, and the hopes we have placed in technology to save us from our own human frailty, as well as the fear that the power of technology can generate. Each of the people discussed in this book had his or her own reason for chasing this new idea, but all their lives have been shaped by the ambitions, greed, idealism, and human frailty that have elevated Bitcoin from an obscure academic paper to a billion-dollar industry. For some participants, the outcome has been one of incredible wealth within a short period of time. For others, it has ended in poverty and even prison. Bitcoin itself is always one big hack away from total failure. But even if it does collapse, it has already provided one of the most fascinating tests of how money works, who benefits from it, and how it might be improved. It is unlikely to replace the dollar in 5 years, but it provides a glimpse of where we might be when the government inevitably stops printing the faces of dead presidents on expensive paper. Anyone joining the Bitcoin network can generate his or her own Bitcoin address, and a corresponding private key. The Bitcoin address is usually a string of 34 letters and numbers. The private key is a string of 64 characters. As an example, one actual Bitcoin address is 16R5PTOKAUNXXXJQE4HG5JZRFW69FNP@F. The private key for this particular address is 5JJ5RLKJYMMSX HAWA 334CDZN COVE W60LFMPFL8H1W9PI DU PMF3. Only the person with this private key can sign off on transactions from that address. The address is empty, so don't bother trying. Each Bitcoin address has one and only one private key. The relationship between the private key and the address is determined by a series of complex math equations, which makes it essentially impossible to work backward from the public Bitcoin address to find the private key. A Bitcoin user can generate endless numbers of Bitcoin addresses and private keys. There is no cost for doing so. The length of the addresses and the sheer number of potential addresses ensure that it is all but impossible for the same address to be generated twice. With a private key, a user, let's call her Alice, can send money from her address without ever sharing the private key with anyone else. Rather than sending out her private key, Alice puts her private key into software on her own computer, along with details of her transaction. Without sending this information to the network, the Bitcoin software on Alice's computer runs the information through a series of complicated math equations that spits out a special code, often referred to as a digital signature. This part of the process can happen even if Alice's computer is offline. It is this digital signature, a unique product of her private key and the transaction taking place, that Alice sends out to the network along with her transaction, much like a signature on a check. The computers that get Alice's digital signature are unable to work backward to get Alice's private key, thanks to the mathematical innovations involved. But the computers can put Alice's digital signature and her public Bitcoin address into another series of complicated math equations and verify that the digital signature was, indeed, created by the private key corresponding to the public address. Again, these are very sophisticated mathematical manipulations that happen on both sides of this, on one side to generate the signature and on the other to verify it. It is necessary for the computers on the network to verify every transaction because there is no central authority to do this work. Once the computers do verify that Alice has the right private key, they then check that Alice's Bitcoin address has the coins she is trying to send. The computers on the network do this by scanning the record of all previous Bitcoin transactions coming to and from the address Alice is using. Satoshi saw that it would be problematic if each computer on the network recorded every transaction as it arrived. A transaction might reach one computer before it reached another computer on the network, leading to disagreements about the balance in each address. Bitcoin needed to have one definitive record of when each transaction occurred, and Satoshi came up with a clever way to achieve this through the use of a kind of ongoing contest that any member of the network could compete in. To win the contest, all the computers on the network would compile recent transactions, as they were sent around the network, into long lists, which were referred to generically as blocks. After compiling the transactions into a block, a computer would then run the block through yet another specialized math equation, known as a hash function, which can take any data, the Gettysburg address or your name, and turn these data into a unique 64-character digest. The computers taking part in the Bitcoin contest are looking for a block that can be put into a hash function known as SHA-256 and generate a 64-character digest with a specific number of zeros at the beginning. If, for instance, the computers are looking for a digest with 5 zeros at the beginning, either of these digests would be a winner. 00006D77546A FA1914846B010BD164F395BD34C210 2E5E99E0CB9CF173C1D87 or 00007AC6B 77F49380A90F3544A51EF0BFBFC83048161AAB73DOF77C2099319. Because SHA-256, like other hash functions, is essentially impossible to reverse engineer, it is impossible to tell what sort of block will lead to a digest with five zeros at the beginning. Given that SHA-256 and other hash functions always generate the same digest from any particular input, if every computer put the same transactions into their block, every computer would get the same digest out the other end. In order to differentiate their blocks, in the hope of finding a winning block, each computer would be tasked with adding a random number onto the end of the block. Because of the sensitive nature of hash functions, changing the random number at the end of the block from 20 to 22 could potentially change the digest from a digest with 1 zero to a digest with 10 zeros at the beginning. If one random number didn't lead to a digest with the desired number of zeros, the computer would try the block with another random number attached to see if that worked. All the computers hoping to win would keep trying out new random numbers, and adding incoming transactions, until one computer found a block that led to a digest with the correct number of zeros. Because finding an answer involved trying out random numbers, this contest was more a game of luck than a game of skill, but the computer that could run guesses through the hash function fastest would increase its chances of winning, just as a person with 20 lottery tickets has a better chance of winning than a person with only one. The number of zeros required to win the contest was somewhat inconsequential, but made it easy to adjust the difficulty of the contest and ensure that new blocks arrived approximately every 10 minutes. If computers were winning more often than every 10 minutes, the Bitcoin software could adjust and demand that computers find a digest with more zeros at the beginning. If computers were not winning frequently enough, the software could adjust and allow winners to have less zeros. As the contest became harder, it required more high-powered computer hardware to win it. When a computer did find a winning block, it would send that block around the network, so that the other computers could verify that the block did indeed generate a digest with the desired number of zeros at the beginning. The computers would then add the winning block to the blockchain held on all the computers, thus recording the list of transactions included in the block. That block became the official record of all transactions that occurred since the previous winning block. If the winning block left out a few transactions that were included in the blocks created by other computers, those transactions would not be recorded on the blockchain and would be left out for the next round of blocks. In addition to the transactions and the random number, the blocks also included a reference to the previous block and data on the state of the Bitcoin network, so that all this information would also be recorded on the blockchain. The creative method for arriving at a single, communally agreed upon record of transactions provided a long-sought solution to a conundrum known as the Byzantine General's Problem. Before Bitcoin, computer scientists struggled with how to build a reliable network of unrelated people, if some of the people could not be trusted. The method of building a blockchain, with each block coming from just one member of the network, and disagreements being solved by majority rule, solved this problem. When a computer generated a winning block, it also won a bundle of new coins, 50 bitcoins when the system first began. These coins were created in a clever way. In essence, when computers were generating the list of transactions in a block, they included in their list a transaction granting one of their own bitcoin addresses 50 bitcoins out of thin air. When a block won the lottery, and was added to the blockchain, this seemingly fictional transaction was turned into a reality, and the address in question had 50 more bitcoins attached to it. By making it onto the blockchain, the transaction was made real. The transaction that created new bitcoins would be referred to as the coinbase of each block. If a computer tried to grant itself more than 50 new bitcoins, the whole block would be rejected by the other computers, even if it generated a digest with the correct number of zeros. Conclusion. The aficionados that worked to create the Bitcoin concept have undoubtedly opened the doors for the new digital currency on the block. What remains to be seen is whether cryptocurrency will actually oust paper money as a legal tender globally. For that to happen, the current financial institutions will have to throw in the towel in the battle against this form of payment system that encourages privacy. The stage is set. What determines the winner of this duel is the number and caliber of soldiers each side can recruit. As it stands, it may be safe to say that it is a case of no victor, no vanquished. When the Bitcoin concept hit the airwaves, some acquaintances of mine bought in right away. The value of the coins have skyrocketed since then, and they now have a lot of money due to the calculated risks they took. Their motivation was profit. But profit is not the only motivation for seeing the cryptocurrency market thrive. What might be your own motivation for exploring the crypto world? Would you be willing to invest in this market knowing what you know about its history? Why don't you take a leap and see what happens?